Hello, I am Ravi Krishnan from Money Control. It is Monday, September the 17th. The rupee continued to slide and stock markets shed over 1% despite government assurances over the health of the economy and some measures to boost capital inflows. The Modi government has made it easier for companies to borrow short-term from overseas markets and also removed some restrictions for foreign investors. But going by Monday's response, these measures don't seem to be working. We have with us today Gaurav Kapoor, Chief Economist with IndusInd Bank, to discuss the decline and the fall of the rupee, why we should be concerned, and what can be done to staunch the bleeding. Hi, Gaurav.
Hi, Ravi.
So, the government's measures really don't seem to be working.
Well, I think the right way to look at it is that this is the first policy response, other than, of course, the RBI's own direct intervention by selling dollars to support the rupee. I think, in that sense, this is really the first comprehensive policy response coming in from the, you know, from the Ministry of Finance, and covers not only the capital inflow part, which you mentioned, but also covers the curbing of non-essential imports. So one of the main reasons why, as you know, one of the reasons why the rupee is under pressure, which it is on account of widening of the current account deficit, and which is of course visible in the monthly trade deficit numbers, with the latest print coming at close to $17.5 billion. And I'm talking of trade, merchandise trade here. On the services trade, of course, we run a surplus of about 6.7. So on a monthly basis, you have basically a gap of about, at this point in time, a gap of about $10 billion, which has to be financed through capital flows. And one of the biggest source of capital flow, of course, is portfolio flows, which is money coming in from FIIs and debt and equity, where in the backdrop of monetary normalization by the Fed, which involves two things essentially. One, increase in interest rates by the Fed, which are now almost 2% higher. This is almost a 2% increase since the Fed started raising rates, and since mid last year, they've also started to reduce the size of their balance sheet, which essentially means that they are taking away the excess dollars which they had created in the aftermath of the global financial crisis as a part of the QE. And as a result, global liquidity conditions are tightening. So, which in turn means that economies, especially emerging market economies, which have heavy reliance on capital flows, have had seen their currencies under pressure. So when I say heavy reliance on capital flows, I'm referring to the requirement to fund that 10 billion gap on a monthly basis, which on a yearly basis works out to be close to 3% of GDP in case of India. So you need similar capital flows to fund that gap. Now, the thing is that capital flows, especially portfolio flows, which provide a fairly large part of that financing, have actually so far this calendar year and this fiscal year have seen outflows.
But this outflows of foreign investor money, yeah, isn't it more due to global conditions rather than local conditions?
Precisely. So it is. So you're right. As I said earlier, it is global liquidity squeeze combined with rising interest rates by the Fed, which in turn leads to what we call risk aversion by global investors. In fact, the only asset market, or the only equity market in the world which is doing well is the US market. So as a result, what you've seen is money flowing back into the US, into US equities. You've seen money flowing back into US bonds. In fact, US 10-year yield, despite almost 2% increase by interest rates by Fed, has not been able to break the 3% mark. In fact, the short end yields have moved up, but the long end has been fairly steady and stable. So essentially, yes, the global backdrop has become clearly a lot more challenging. Then in terms of our own challenges, I think one of the key factors, of course, is the increase in oil prices. Now, oil prices, given our dependence on oil imports, has always been a pressure point for India's fiscal and external health. So I think global investors at such times pick out economies depending on their fundamentals. And one of the biggest, one of the key fundamentals they look at is your external financing requirement, which would be current account deficit, which would also be external debt which is maturing in the next 1 year, whether you are able to finance that. And against that, they would judge what are the backstops available to you. In case of India, our foreign exchange reserves at about $400 billion cover our imports by almost, I think, 9 months of our imports. As per the RBI's annual report, as of 31st March, almost 10.9 months. Since then, of course, reserves have come down. So our cover has come down. But by and large, reserves are adequate. I mean, we've ramped up our reserves significantly since 2013, when the last time when we saw a significant pressure on the currency. So yes, there are global factors at play, of course, and global factors have affected each economy differently. So for instance, in Asia, rupee is actually among the worst performing currency, because some of the other Asian economies have seen their current account fairly low levels of current account, fairly low levels of inflation. But you know, in the second half of this calendar, I think you are now beginning to see pressure on those those currencies as well. For instance, South Korean won has been fairly steady, but you've now beginning to see pressure there. Indonesian rupiah has been steady. You've seen pressure there. China, of course, is the big one where you've seen the currency come under pressure.
So the contagion effect is in play.
Precisely. So the contagion effect now is in play. From the initial move in the beginning of the calendar year, in the first half, I would say the move was perhaps also fundamentally driven. In fact, to come back to your question, I think the move is also to some degree fundamentally driven. And the reason I say that is if I look at our trade deficit and its drag on overall growth, because ultimately trade deficit is India essentially importing our consumption, you know, meeting your consumption through imports, or exporting your consumption in that sense, or reverse imports of import of consumption, as RBI's annual report puts it. So the drag caused by that on our growth in the last 7 to 8 quarters has been close to about 1% of GDP, which means that, you know, because of widening trade gap, our trade deficit our growth has suffered. So which in turn implies that there was a requirement of a fundamental correction in the currency. And with almost, I think, close to 10% depreciation in the rupee in real effective exchange rate terms, which captures its move against a basket and not only the dollar, I think a lot of that misalignment is actually behind us. So now we are in the contagion phase, and it's very difficult to say how long will this play out, because it ultimately depends on the strength of the US dollar, because the conditions I mentioned earlier, global tightening of global dollar liquidity, higher US rates, and on top of that, you've seen the US government providing a tax stimulus when the US economy is already growing above its potential. So all of that has seen sharp growth pick up there, has pushed the Fed to raise rates a little more aggressively than they had indicated at the beginning of this year. So all of which has translated into a fairly sharp appreciation of the dollar across the board, which is essentially, so the flip side is we've seen the rupee depreciate. So now the second half of this year, especially over the last, in this month, month of September, we've seen the contagion spread, we've seen the contagion impact. And as a result, now you've seen a little bit more, while I would say that there's no need to panic. And as it is, I think in that sense, the government's measures are quite, the response is measured, and I think it's the right approach. But that said, I think all the options are on the table. Depending on how the situation pans out, I think the next move most likely will be a rate hike by the Monetary Policy Committee when they meet in October for their regular scheduled meeting. Typically, that is the orthodox response in case of any pressure on your currency. You try and by raising interest rates, you do two things.
But inflation is falling, and the RBI's mandate is flexible inflation targeting. It is not to defend any level of the rupee, isn't
inflation,
it?
Inflation, precisely, but inflation is falling is not entirely the headline, is not entirely the overall picture. Because headline is this, yes, the latest print is below 4, but core inflation, which takes away food and fuel, or parts of inflation which are, you know, which tend to be volatile in nature, core inflation is still very sticky at 6%. And the only reason food inflation has, or one of the main reasons why food inflation has been low, is because of deflation in vegetable prices. Now, that's not a sustainable, that's unlikely to be sustainable. Especially, and on top of that, with the MSP increases and now government's effort to ramp up procurement in commodities other than rice and wheat, would at some stage mean that food inflation will also be moving up. And for the monetary policy perspective, what you're looking at is now the rear view mirror. What matters is how the expectations around inflation are developing. And in that, RBI's inflation expectation survey over the last couple of readings has consistently shown that households are expecting inflation to go up in the short term and in a year's time. So
surely that's where you don't believe those inflation expectations.
No, of course,
right?
I do.
They always seem to be out of kilter with
that. No, not really. I think I would not agree to that. I think they are a measure like any other. Any statistical measure has its challenges. In fact, I was the part of the RBI's inflation expectation review committee which put out the data before it was, of course, before it was made public. But so I can tell you it's essentially capturing a move. What matters is if expectations are moving, hardening, and that's a fact. And this is now in its 54th round. So I would not take that data lightly. I think that is clearly something which the MPC looks at. They'll of course take into account the fact that headline inflation is lower. But remember, in the first quarter GDP numbers, we saw consumption growth after I think almost 4 or 5 quarters of subdued growth. We've seen a pickup in private consumption growth. We have already beginning, and I mentioned earlier that core inflation at 6% has been sticky, which essentially is pointing towards strengthening demand conditions in the economy. We're beginning to see the impact of that in terms of pricing power in the manufacturing sector, and with input price pressures coming in from higher oil and high oil prices and a weaker rupee, will gradually get passed on to the end consumer because of improving pricing power in the manufacturing sector, all of which will ultimately be inflationary.
Okay. So going back to the overvaluation hypothesis, you said that's largely behind us.
Fundamental misalignment based on something called the macroeconomic balance approach used by the IMF, which puts India's current account deficit, about sustainable current account deficit, at about 2.5 to 3% of GDP. And as a result of which, the correction, if you recall, 2 years back, our current account deficit was about 0.6% of GDP. Went up to about 1.9 in the previous fiscal. This first quarter reading is at 2.4% of GDP. My expectation is we'll end up with 2.8% of GDP this year. Now, in terms of the correction which can happen on account of the exchange rate and subsequently through elasticity of exports and imports, I think this is large enough a move. But the fact is that in a very short span of time, exports are relatively inelastic, and in our case, I think if I look at some of our imports and the wide base at which our imports have been growing, even there is a certain degree of inelasticity. But the other measure of overvaluation, of course, is real effective exchange rate index, the 36 country index of the RBI, which based on a base year, because base year matters there, shows a much higher degree of overvaluation, which is still there. But if I correct for the base year from 2004-05 to 2011-12, which is the base year for the GDP, then I think the overvaluation has more or less, in the last, as per the last reading of that, in August, rupee was still about overvalued by 3% in real effective exchange rate terms, which of course is a broader index versus just measuring against one currency. You measure against 3600 other currencies and you also correct for relative inflation. So in that scenario, I think even there has been a correction. So there is, to the point I'm trying to make is there's no exact way of measuring overvaluation. But the fact is that rupees definitely was overvalued. It was affecting our trade. It was leading to our, has led to a fairly sharp widening of trade deficit, which initially, of course, started post demonetization. Then, because on account of disruption in supply chains, you saw some of the domestic demand getting met by imports. But subsequently, and then of course the GST implementation happened. But the economy has more or less come out of that phase. But our trade gap remains still fairly wide. So the depreciation which has happened now, in due course of time, will help correct that, because ultimately exchange rate correction is the most common, or in fact is the most effective way for correction of any imbalance on the external side. Because like any other price in the economy, exchange rate is a very critical price.
So should we be concerned about the depreciation going forward?
Yes, because I think we are not yet completely out of the woods. The contagion continues. I think the only reason why we've seen, I think one of the reasons, let me put it this way, I think one of the reasons we've seen rupee stabilize is that the consistent appreciation of the dollar, which we were seeing in the first half of the year, over the last couple of weeks now has come to a bit of it's beginning to stabilize. So the so-called dollar index, which measures its move against a number of other currencies, has stabilized now. So effectively, so if stronger dollar led to a weakening of EM currencies, and including the rupee, a steady dollar now is giving breathing space. But given the fact that Fed is very much is likely to go ahead with two rate hikes at least in 2018, and I think we'll only know in the December Fed meeting, or in fact even the September Fed meeting, as to whether there is any change in their thought process in 2019 in terms of where they see the final terminal Fed rate or the neutral rate. Will be able to assess if there's any good, there's going to be any change in the way the dollar is going to behave. But till that time, that remains one risk. The other risk, of course, is from oil prices, because oil prices have again now, after a period where you saw some consolidation in the 70 to 75 range, I'm talking of Brent here, prices are again moving up for a very, and there the market dynamics, supply and demand dynamics are at play. In fourth quarter, as per the International Energy Agency, on a daily basis, there will be a shortfall of about 500,000 barrels of oil per day, because you see impact of US sanctions on Iran coming into play in November. Venezuela's capacity is almost half of what used to be. Libya is facing problems. Shale production in US growth is now coming off. There are supply and structural bottlenecks there. So all of that is kind of, and on the other side, demand, especially during winter months, picks up. So that would keep the oil prices supported. So I think it's, and to the extent where, to the extent the contagion effects continue, though I think in the last week, one of the key economies which has triggered the contagion, the Turkish economy, has finally raised rates, gone back to a more orthodox way of approaching the pressure on their currency, which actually has lost almost half of its value in this calendar year. Of course, Argentina is the other example. So the point then, and in fact, I am worried more about the ultimate move in China, because as you know, the trade tensions are brewing between US and China, and US and China is trying to slow growth down from a very high levels of debt, credit fueled growth, slowing that down with the kind of with dollar denominated non financial corporate debt it's close to about 200% of their GDP. So any increase in rates in US and the squeezing of global dollar liquidity is going to put pressure there as well. It's just that the PBOC has, of course, a much larger, they have almost close to 3 trillion in reserves. So they've been supporting the currency. But Chinese policymakers are particularly sensitive about growth slowing down. So that's a risk still to play out, I think. So there is, to answer your question, yes, I don't think we are yet out of this issue altogether. And that's why I think all the options are on the table in terms of policy action from the government and the RBI.
So given the Chinese risk which is looming, given the negative global sentiment and further US Fed rate hikes, what other options are there for the government and RBI to defend the rupee?
See, the stand in 2013, we had a, if you go back, that is the most recent episode where the currency depreciated by almost 30% in the span of 3 months. The first response, other than direct intervention by the RBI, is of course to raise interest rates, which we in any ways are doing. And remember, the economy of 2018 is very different from economy of 2013. And there are a couple of things which have happened over this period. One, from a monetary policy perspective, we've now in a flexible inflation targeting regime. And ultimately, the value of a currency over a longer period of time is a function of inflation and growth differential. Now, inflation differential, as long as our monetary policies become far more focused and sensitive to inflation, I think that has improved the policy environment around the external sector, especially the value of the rupee. Secondly, growth differential. If I talk of growth differential, that clearly first quarter growth at 8.2% and expected growth of 7.5% in this year does put India among fastest. Is the growth potential and the growth premium, of course, is very much there. It's that. In the current setup, in the current environment, I think while external financing requirement is increased, and on the other side, capital flows this year are likely to be actually lower than what our requirement is. And as a result, I think we'll end up with a balance of payments deficit, which essentially means that RBI will run down its reserves to support the currency. The other options, of course, are other than increasing interest rates, are to ensure that flow of capital. You attract more capital, and on the other side, you try and shrink your current account deficit. In case of India, means you curb non-essential imports. In case of oil, free pricing or deregulation of pricing of petrol and diesel while there is a tax aspect to it, the fact is that it has allowed for rationalization of consumption. So similarly. You either slow growth down and as a result slow down the growth of non-oil, non-gold imports because in a very short span of time it's very difficult to create domestic capacity. So when we talk of curbing non-essential imports, it is going to be an inflation, can lead to higher inflation because it's very difficult to create domestic capacity for such items in a short span of time where demand exists. From a current account side, I think efforts, you have to be careful in terms of controlling your non-essential imports through higher tariffs, which I think the government is already doing. They're already considering higher tariffs in case of some of other commodities. Like I think even there was some news earlier today that even import duty on gold might be increased. But as I said, I think this is a double. This is a you have to do it in a balanced way because there can be retaliation as well. Then the other aspect, of course, is to improve the flow of capital. There, the options really are in terms of at some stage open a window for to route money through NRIs like we did in 2013. But that should ideally be the last option. That should ideally not be the first option, because in 2013 what we did essentially was we subsidized the carry trade in the sense that the money brought in from the landed cost of dollars raised abroad and swapped into rupees was subsidized by the RBI, or rather the hedging cost was reduced by the RBI, and given the fact that interest rates in India are higher than let's say outside India, or especially dollar rates, there was this nice carry which one could earn, which is essentially the interest rate differential. Now that again, and in the past before that, whenever we've raised dollars from non-residents, especially non-resident Indians, it's on the back of extraordinary circumstances, which country-specific extraordinary circumstances, like the resurgent India bonds before that. So I think is the last step. The another intermediate step could be creating a special, separate window for oil marketing companies to buy dollars or swap dollars with the RBI directly. So in terms of what matter, I think what the value judgment here is the sequence of these measures. But ultimately, I think the answer lies in ensuring that our external deficit, our trade deficit, shrinks. And that's where I think the alignment or the weakening of the rupee will help. I mean, it's a part of the answer. I think that's an equally important, flexibility on the exchange rate is an equally important aspect of this managing this overall problem.
There are no easy answers. That's a key takeaway from this interview with Gaurav. Either the government has to curb growth or cut the deficit by imposing higher tariffs on non-essential imports, or it has to try attracting more capital inflows when the global sentiment is negative. Thank you, Gaurav, for your time with us.
Most welcome.